All right, we're ready for Genesis 12 and 13 in our study. And this is a turning point, as we mentioned last time. And so hopefully this, you have flagged that in your mind as we get ready for chapter 13. A turning point, by that I simply mean we have two major divisions of the book, chapters 1 through 11 being the early history. We finish that, and that ends the universal history. So it's, I picture the book of Genesis like a camera that starts in zeroing in on creation and then the first man, and then it begins to grow. And by chapter 10, we have a number of nations we'll talk about in a moment. And then the camera zeroes in on one family, one nation, and that's the Hebrews, the descendants of Abraham. So that's where we are. We're ready to talk about the patriarchal history. And we're going to be talking about Abraham, then Isaac, and then Jacob, and on down the line. So that's where we are. Universal history is over. Let's review where we've been. Chapter 1, creation, yes. The 6 days of creation. Chapter 2, yeah, man in the garden, Adam and Eve in the garden. Chapter 3, yes, they sin. Adam and Eve commit sin. Chapter 4, Cain and Abel. Chapter 5, now get a genealogy from Adam to Noah. Very important chapter, though we get lost in the names. Chapter 6 through how many chapters deal with what? 6 through 9 deals with the flood. All right, so chapter 6 has to do with the reason and the preparation for the flood. Chapter 7 is the flood itself. Yeah, here's the world being destroyed by flood. Chapter 8 is the case where Noah comes out of the ark. Very good. Chapters 9. Yeah, and Noah's drunkenness. So we had two chapters last time, chapter 10. Yeah, very good. Yes, the nation from Noah's son. And then chapter 11, the Tower of Babel. And that gets us to through the first section of the book of Genesis. Now here's what we saw in chapters 10 and 11. These are the nations. I want to paint this picture again, just a moment. About how the camera zeroes in on one nation. These are the nations, and we have our code over here on the side. And so we have the descendants of Japheth, and we have the descendants of Shem, and the descendants of Ham, all represented by the various colors. But these are the nations that were developed or came from those three sons. And if we look at it in this form, we have a number of nations such as Assyria and the Chaldeans, and the Armenians and the Ammonites, Moabites, Edomites, etc., come from Shem. The Ethiopians, Egyptians, the Libyans, etc., Canaanites came from Ham, and Japheth has a number that comes from him. But what we're interested in is there is one particular nation now that is the focal point from this point on through the rest of the Old Testament, and that is God's dealing with the Israelites, the descendants of Abraham. And so that's why we zero in on him now. Now, I want to mention this before we get any further, because we're going to touch on this a little bit later, that we had the descendants coming all the way down to Terah, who was the father of Abram, and then we have here the siblings of Abram, but notice that Sarah, or Sarai, was by another mother, and so that's why a little bit later he talks about her being his sister. We'll talk about that in the reference on that, a little beyond this story in chapter 20. We'll talk about that a little bit later. All right, let's get into chapter 12 now and talk about a very important principle. This is a very important chapter. Why do I say that? All chapters are important, but this one really, for the rest of the Bible story, this one's really important. Yeah, it's the seed promise. We have a promise that's made to Abraham, and everything from this point on is going to come back and be rooted right here in Genesis 12. So let's talk about the promise to Abraham. Three things happen in chapter 12. I call the chapter the promise and call of Abraham. We have the promise to him, the call and the journey to Canaan, and then the journey to Egypt. So we're going to track all of that on the map here in just a little bit. Let's talk about the first three verses. In the first three verses, we have the land promise, verse 1, the nation promise, verse 2, and the seed promise, verse 3. It might be good if you made a note to the side of your in the margin of your text concerning the land promise, verse 1. That I will give you a land that I will show you. Now we'll come back to the land because that's going to be significant in tonight's study. The second one is in verse 2, and that's the nation promise. We're not going to spend much time on the nation except to say that the nation is going to come from, a great nation is going to come from the descendants of Abraham. Evidence of that is the fact that when they went into the land of Egypt, we'll see at the end of the book, Genesis 46, that's not the last chapter, in Exodus 1, they were 70 in number when they went into the land of Egypt. That didn't seem like a major nation. But by the time they came out, Numbers 1 in Exodus 12 suggested there were over 600,000 fighting men on foot. So the estimates were anywhere from 1 and more likely 2.5 million, and we don't know the exact number, but the number was probably more like the 2 to 2.5 million because this was the number of fighting men, not including women and children, and those men who were not old enough to fight and those who were too old to be among the fighting men. So they did become a great nation. But then there is the seed promise. If you want to make a marginal note, let's cover a couple of passages here. Galatians 3:16 and Acts chapter 3, 25 and 26. I'll give those again. Galatians 3:16 and Acts 3, 25 and 26. Those passages are going to interpret for me that the seed promise has to do with our salvation. That's the promise that in the seed of Abraham, which would be the Messiah, all nations will be blessed. And so you say, how do you know that's what that's talking about? Because that's what the interpretation was given in Acts chapter 3. All right. So we have those three promises. So the rest of the Old Testament is going to be rooted in that. We're going to come to a section, for example, the conquest in the book of Joshua. What are we doing? Well, God's giving them this land. They're conquering the land. God's building a nation now. And God's going to be preserving this nation. When he takes them off into Egypt, Genesis chapter 37 and beyond, God's preserving this nation so that he's keeping the promise of the land and the nation and the sea. Make sense? On and on and on. God rescued Abraham from killing Isaac so that this would be fulfilled. Does that make sense? So every story is going to relate back to this. This is the root right here. Questions? Comments? Now then, let's go to verse, before we get to verse 4, I want to suggest this is when we get to the conquest in the book of Joshua. This is the land that they're going to settle. This is as it's been already settled by this. So we're years and years and years away from getting to this point in the text, that is, we're years away from getting to the point. But this is the land that God has promised, the land of Palestine, the land that you recognize as divided by the tribes. All right, now I want to talk about when this call was made. A cursory reading of Genesis 12 would leave you with the impression, if you didn't have any other text, by that you don't have Acts, you don't have Nehemiah, and you don't have chapter 15, etc. If you didn't have any other text, you would get the impression this call to leave your country, get out of your country and from your kindred, from your father's house to a land that I will show you, was given at Haran. And perhaps it was. But let's see if we can make some sense of that. We know that Abram came from the Ur of the Chaldees and made his way up through Haran. And we mention him being in Haran at the end of chapter 11. This is not true chronology. To me, it seems like chapter 12 backs up and catches us up. Does that make sense? We've done that before in other books, in other chapters. All right. Then he's going to come down, and we'll get this a little bit later, down into the land of Canaan, then into Egypt, and then back to the land of Canaan, and they divide the land between him and Lot. Now, we'll get all the details of that in a moment, but here's what I'm after. The call to come, let's just see what it seems to be saying. Get you out of your country. We don't know where he is at the moment. Last time we saw anything about him, he was in Haran, verse 32. Well, then when we come to chapter 12 and verse 4, he departed, as the Lord had spoken to him, he's 75 years old, and he departed from Haran. All right, sounds like that's where it came from. All right, let's go to a couple of references now, and you might want to make a marginal note of this for future study. Let's go to Acts chapter, hang on, let me get my Bible open. Let's go to Acts chapter 7. And here is an historical account. In Acts chapter 7, verses 1 and 2, or 2 and 3 actually, that said, the Lord God of glory, I'm reading it, Acts 7 in verse 2, appeared to the father Abraham when he was in Mesopotamia before he dwelt in Haran and said, get you out of your country and from your relatives to a land that I will show you. See, that was why he's in the Ur of the Chaldees. Then, verse 4, he came out of the land of the Chaldeans and dwelt in Haran. So did God give him this call when he got to Haran? Well, let's put a footnote there and say, raise a question mark. But I know this text says he got the call to leave the land and go to another country while in the Ur of the Chaldees. That makes sense? All right, let's go to another text. Nehemiah 9. You probably have some things noted in Nehemiah chapter 9. And verse 7. May have something noted there about providence. That you are the Lord God who chose Abram and brought him up out of Ur of the Chaldees. All right, what I'm trying to suggest to you, and in chapter 15, by the way, of Genesis, and in verse 7, makes the same point. So what's going on in Genesis 12? When God tells him to leave in Genesis 12, this may be just a quotation of what had already taken place down in the Ur of the Chaldeans. I know it had taken place there. Acts 7 tells me that. But it would seem to me that it's repeated here, that this may be the record of what God repeated while at Haran. Does that make sense? And that seems to fit here. But I know the call had already come back in the Ur of the Chaldees. Is that making sense? So there's often some discussion among students. No, he didn't get the call down in Ur. He got it up at Haran. Well, no, Acts 7 said he got it down here at Ur, and he may have been repeated here, and that may be what Genesis 12 is talking about. So when the text says in verse 1, get you out of your country, this may be simply out of this country now, that is of Haran, and keep going, or it may be simply talking about what had happened back down at Ur. Either one, that's not a big deal. It's just trying to mesh some of the stories together. All right. Is that making sense now? All right. Now, here's something you might want to do. Don't get lost in this. You may want to make a picture of this. This is helpful to me when I'm studying all of these texts. There are four references here. It looks like there's a whole bunch of them. There's only four references. In chapter 12 and verse 13, I note the other three. You got chapter 12, verse 3, 13 and 16, 15 and 5, and 22 and 17. These are references where this same promise is repeated. Is that making sense? So I go over if you just write those four down that are underlined, then you can trace those and fill those in on your own time. But at chapter 12, I've got these other three references mentioned. At chapter 13, 16, I put the other three. At chapter 15, I put the other three. Chapter 22, I put the other three. So that when I get to those chapters, I readily have a reference where that was mentioned before or going to be mentioned again. Make sense? So if you're getting the slides, you've already got that. If you don't, you want to make a picture of that. That's about to go away. If you can't do that and you want them, send me a text and I'll get that to you. Anyway, those four references is what you need right there. All right. Now then, let's continue with verse 4, the call to go to journey on to Canaan. Now, Abraham was 75 years old. Let's talk about a little chronology here, or timing and date. And I'm going to preface my comments by saying I don't think you'll find hardly any two chronologies that agree on the time of Abraham. One scholar said today, as I read him, that he is dated anywhere from the 15th century B.C. to the 21st century B.C. Well, that's a pretty big gap, I want to tell you. Pretty big gap. So don't lock in on my numbers here. We gave some numbers last time, but I'm wanting to illustrate a simple point. I know Abraham was 75 years old. This seems to be, by following the chronologies that I have generally followed, about, and if you write this in your Bible, write it in pencil because you may change your mind. About 2,088 years since Adam. Now you say, well, I'm following a chronology that says another number. Yeah, you probably are. And I've followed some that have got a different number. They don't all agree. I'm driving at a point. So about 2,088 years since Adam, since creation. So here's my point in this. That at the time of Abraham, it doesn't seem like it's that far from creation because we're only 12 chapters in and 5 weeks in our study. It hasn't been that long since creation, has it? But Abraham is as far away from creation as we are from Christ. You stop and think about that. You look back and you say, well, it's been a long time since Christ. It's been over 2,000 years, 2,025 or give or take 6 years, 4 to 6 years because the calendar messed up. All right, so 2,000 something years, 2,025 or 2,030 years since Christ. All right? 2,088, there's not much difference if my chronology be anywhere close. So let's just round it up to 2,000. 2,000 years in either direction. We're as close to Christ as Abraham was to creation. I'm just trying to get you to get your picture in your mind is all I'm trying to do. Don't get locked in on that number. All right, now let's start at verse 4 and talk about his journey to Canaan now. That he was 75 years old when he departed Haran, and he took with him who? His wife, his brother's son, which was Lot, and a lot of possessions, and the people with whom they had acquired in Haran. So they took a lot from the Ur of the Chaldees, and when they get to Haran, they're getting even more. They're going to go to Egypt and get even more. Things are going to grow. All right, I want to track him here now. So at verse 7, he comes to Shechem. So he's left Haran here, and if you're following on the map, he's going to come down here to Shechem. So while we're here, let's go to the little inset, which is kind of blown up for us. You see Shechem there. That's where he came first. Where does he go next? Kind of a settling point. Came down at to Bethel and pitched his tent between Bethel and Ai. You see that on the little map there. Or if you're looking at your map in the back of your Bible, it's between Bethel and Ai. So that's where he settles. That's where he camps. He's going to come back there later, but for the moment, that's where he's camping. Notice the promise that God gave him at verse 7. What does he tell him? This is it. In other words, I'm going to paraphrase verse 7. Just take a look around. This is the land I was telling you about. This is what I told you about in the Ur of Chaldees when you got to Haran, I told you. And this is it. This is the land. Just take a look around. This is it. This is what I'm going to give you. They don't have it yet. It's coming. Now, let's go a little bit further. At verse 9, you're going to see that they kept going still toward the south. And the south is mentioned multiple times. We'll see it again in chapter 13, verse 1. What is the south here? It's not just, it had reference to a region and not just the direction of south. It was in the south, southern direction. But it had reference to a dry section of Judah. So the south would be, that's not what I want, would be basically, if you follow my little arrow right here, that here is the Dead Sea. The south was below Bethel and Ai and further south. So this region down in here, or if you want to look at this map, down in here would be the region of the south. So he's going even further south in the direction of south, but this region that comes from a Hebrew word, that it simply means the Negev, which had reference to a dry section, and it was a region there. Does that make sense? So they were going further. He's going to come back to the south a little bit later in chapter 13. All right, now let's get him to Egypt. What happens now in 10 to 20? When he gets to the land, there's a famine in the land. Now this is, if we have time, we're going to list some of the trials of Abraham, which we've done in sermons before. But you think about the trials that Abraham has. One, he leaves his home to go to a country he's never seen before. And then when he gets there, it's an occupied land. It's not a land that's okay, we can take this because there's nobody here. There's people already there. That's going to cause problems, chapter 13. And then there's a famine as soon as he gets there. This doesn't seem like a vacation at all, does it? All right, now notice at verse 10, it was so severe that he heads down to Egypt. All right, so let's go back now to our map here. And we have him going down here. He's going to make his way from the south where we left him and make his way all the way over to Egypt. Now, before he gets to Egypt, what does he tell Sarah? Yeah, if they realize I'm your husband, they'll kill me and they'll let you live. Now, this is not the last time that's going to happen. And it's true that she was a half-sister, but he's trying to deceive them. And so did he lie? Yeah, he did. We're going to see that later. So you might make a marginal note at verse 13. She was a half-sister. We demonstrated that on the family tree a moment ago. And evidence of that is Genesis 20 and in verse 12. So if you make a marginal note there, that'll help you for future studies. Genesis 20 and 12, she was a half-sister. We'll make a point about that maybe a little bit later in some practical things. Now then, when he was there with the Egyptians, they saw she was beautiful, and so now what do they do with her? Yeah, they take her to the Pharaoh. In other words, adding her to his harem. So just another woman. He already has multiple women, but he needs one more, perhaps. And so they do that, and they treated Abram well instead of killing him, perhaps because that of telling the story. What happens at verse 16? Yeah, the sheep and the oxen and the donkeys and the female servants and the female donkeys and camels. So it's just adding to his wealth. Now that you probably wouldn't be excited if you went somewhere and they said, well, here's five camels or 100 camels and here's a bunch of donkeys. You think, oh, great. But this is part of his wealth. It's adding to his wealth that he has. And so they're giving him more and more. And so he's going to take that along with him. Now let's make a marginal note here, at least in our mind, if not in our text. We talk often about the faith of Abraham, and it was strong, very strong. It took a lot of faith to leave Ur. It took a lot of faith later to sacrifice his son. But Abraham had a lapse in faith here, in this sense, that his faith seemed to be weakened to a degree because he didn't put trust in the promise that God had made, nor did he put trust in God's providence. How so? Absolutely. So God had made a promise, I'm going to make a great nation. He doesn't have any children yet. No children at all. And so I'm going to make a great nation out of you, out of your seed. The nations of the earth will be blessed, which means he has to have seed. And I'm going to take you to a land, and so you're going to be in this land. But he's gone to Egypt. And God had already told him, that's this back up here where you left before you came to Egypt. That's what the land I'm going to give you. If he dies down here in Egypt, none of the promises are going to be fulfilled. So he didn't have faith in the promise fully. Number one, and God's providence. Yeah, they would kill a man for his wife. But if God's made a promise, what's God going to do? He's going to protect that somehow to fulfill his promise. So here's the lesson I'm learning from that. If Abraham had the strong faith he had and could have moments of weakness, finish my sentence, the same can happen to us. Exactly. I might have strong faith, I think I have, but I might have lapses of weakness where I forget the promise or I don't have confidence in the promise or I don't trust God's providence to see me through it. Could it happen to me? Yeah, you bet it could. It happened to Abraham. All right. So what happens now when they find out this is actually this man's wife, Abraham's wife? Yeah. And so their reaction to that was, yeah, what have you done to us? And basically, verse 20, take her and leave and get out of here and get gone. They didn't want any more of God's dealing with them. Well, God's not through with them. They don't know that, and we don't know that until we get later. But God's going to give some plagues to them a little bit later for another reason. All right, that's chapter 12. Does that make sense? All right, let's go to chapter 13, see if we make sense of chapter 13. We have Abram and Lot return to Canaan. They've just been there, but they're going to go back. And hopefully we'll have some time for some practical things toward the end. All right, let's talk about returning to Canaan and then dividing the land. He's down here in Egypt. This is a little different map that shows me some things that my other maps don't have. So let's see if we can make some sense. Let's go back to our outline. We're looking at verses 1 to 13, the return to Canaan and the dividing of the land This is not, don't get confused, this is not the dividing into the tribes that happens in the book of Joshua. This is dividing between who? Abram and Lot. All right. All right, let's get to chapter 13. Then Abram went up from Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had and Lot with him, to the south. There's our phrase again. That region. By the way, right here, if you look on this map, this Negev Your footnote may say Negev with a V on the ends. This is the same region. It's this region down here, toward the south of the Dead Sea. This is the Dead Sea right here. And so it's that region. So he went back there, according to verse 1. He was very rich in livestock and silver and gold. And he went as far as Bethel. Now that's where he was before. That's where he camped before and made an offering before God. And set his tent there between Ai and Bethel. Now then, what happens beginning at verse 4? Verse 5. They've acquired, they take off, get the picture, they take off from the Ur of the Chaldees with a great deal of possessions and people and animals. They get to Haran, get even more. They go to Egypt, get even more. And so they've just got more than can settle in. Because there's something else going on, and I want you to notice at verse 7, the Canaanites and the Perizzites then dwelt in the land. So this is not an empty land. This is all just kind of a desert area, and nobody lives here, and so let's just all settle in here. They're trying to work themselves in amongst the occupants that are already there. Part of the difficulty that Abraham faces. All right. Now, verse 8, you might underline. This is a powerful. I've built a whole series of sermons around this. Abram said to Lot, "Let there be no strife between me and you, and between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for what? We're brethren." We don't need strife. We don't need friction. We don't need pulling apart. We don't need all of this. The tension had begun to build between them because it's too crowded. And one may be thinking they're getting the spot that or somebody else is getting their spot or whatever the case may be. But there's tension that has built, and Abram said, there doesn't need to be any strife because we're family. We're not enemies. You see anything practical in that? Every preacher, at least should have if he doesn't have, ought to have a sermon or a series of sermons, "We are brethren. Let there be no strife for we don't need friction, we don't need division, we don't need fussing and fighting and arguing because we're family, we're brethren." There's a remedy here. Maybe more about that in our practical things. Now, verse 9, what does Abram say to Lot? Yeah. I'll tell you what let's do. Let's go separate directions in the sense that you take some land somewhere else and I'll take what's left. So of this land, why don't you choose what you want? What does Lot do? Verse 10. Yeah, kind of a selfish decision. That's one of the points we make. Let's get ahead of ourselves. Drop down to verse 12. You might underline, he pitched his tent even as far as Sodom. And every preacher's got a sermon on that too. Pitching your tent towards Sodom. That's going to be costly, very costly for him. I don't mean financially. Well, it is financially, but more morally. We'll see more about that as time goes on. But anyway, he looked, and this was before the Lord had destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So let's get a picture of what's going on here. Notice Zoar is mentioned. What verse am I looking at? Verse 10. Zoar is mentioned there. So as they came back out of Egypt here and made their way back up, they're camped right here. And so we don't know, by the way, we don't know exactly the location of Sodom. You may look at a map and you may have one that you're looking at and have looked up today. And some think Sodom is right down here, if I can get my little dot right there, is buried underneath where the water is now at the Dead Sea. I don't know. Some think it's located here. Some think it's maybe a little bit to the west of that. We don't know. We don't know the exact location of Sodom. Now, there's been some recent studies, I would reference some material Dan King has done on that, about maybe where, I think he's the one that did some work on Sodom, that they're beginning to think they can locate that. But generally, the maps you look at, they didn't know, and we don't know the exact location. So this is just maybe an illustration of the idea that Lot goes over here to Sodom and pitches his tent even as far as Sodom. So it's somewhere in this region that I'm circling here is where it is. And then Abram stays in the region right up here toward Hebron. Now, so this is a little closer view of that. He settled in right here at Hebron. If you want to get a picture of Hebron right here in the region of Judah. That's where he settles in. All right. Now, let's get at verse, and the reason at verse 12, you want to underline that. When we get to chapter 19, you're going to say, wait a minute, Lot's got some real problems here with his family and some consequences. Yeah, you're right, because of this decision, pitching his tent as far as Sodom. And so here's a good question. Are we pitching our tent towards Sodom? Make sense? All right, let's see if we can finish up much of the rest of the chapter and then get some practical things here. Let's see, where am I going now? That's not where I want to go. Let's go back to our outline here. Abram moves to Hebron. Now, beginning at verse 14. Well, let's go back to verse 13. I skipped that. Verse 13 is powerful because it's telling me something that I, up to this point, we know it because we've read further. But if this was our first reading of Genesis, we didn't know this till we got to verse 13. He went as far as Sodom, and you think, well, big deal. I guess Sodom's a good city, maybe a beautiful city. What did we just learn about Sodom? Very evil, very wicked. We don't know the kind of wickedness. We don't know how immoral it is till we get a little later in the book. But at this point, he made his way over to Sodom, and it was an exceedingly wicked and sinful against the Lord. Well, and how, I'll say, when we get to chapter 19. We hadn't seen anything like this till we get to chapter 19. But it's a very wicked city. Are you beginning to see the selfish, materialistic concept of Lot and choosing this best land, going as far as Sodom, and yet he didn't give consideration to the fact of how wicked that city may have been and the impact it has on his family? Making sense? All right, now let's get verse 14 on. He moves to Hebron. So let's go back and look at our map here and where Hebron is. So Hebron is right here within that circle. It's where we are. It's where he's going to settle. So beginning at verse 14, the Lord said, now after Lot had separated, lift up your eyes now, and what does God say to him? Verse 15 and 16. Exactly. This is the land I've been telling you about. Told you about in Ur, told about in Haran, and told you about it when you came through the first time. You've come back to the land. This is it. This is the land. And this is what you're going to get. I gave you a land promise, and this is going to be it right here. And so was that by providence that Abram ended up with this instead of him going over towards Sodom? I'll leave that for you to look at. So now verse 16 may be where you want, as we mentioned in our notes a moment ago. You might want to make a marginal note. That same promise is mentioned at 12 and 3. And at 15 and 5, and 22 and 17. Is that making sense? We're lacing all of this together so that when we get to 15 and 5 and 22 and 17, we're going to trace back over here and see all of that. All right, so God said it, verse 16, I'll make your descendants as the dust of the earth. If a man could number the dust of the earth, your descendants could be numbered. Well, they are going to be quite a nation. So God told him in verse 17 to do what? Yeah, walk the breadth and the width and just move yourself up and down through this land, and because this is the land that I've promised. And that's a big deal. What I'm trying to drive home here is God said, I'm going to take you to a land. So God brought him there. He had to go to Egypt. And then when he came back, he said, this is the land. So several times God's already told him, this is the land. This is what I'm going to give you. This is yours and your descendants. Now, it's going to be a while before they conquer the land. So he's not immediately occupying the land. It's going to take a while. That's not fulfilled till the day of Joshua. Make sense? So that all these tribes that we had mentioned a moment ago, and I think they're all listed right there, that all of those tribes will occupy that region. How much of the land that God promised did they get? Every single inch of it. Not one promise failed. We see that at the end of the book of Joshua. Now, we're going to be a while getting there, but we're coming to that. All right, now let's do this for a moment, and I think we've got time. Before we do this, are we making sense of the travels of Abraham? And what I was interested in is these travels right here, that basically the story tonight is he came from the Ur of the Chaldees, made his way up to Haran, and then made his way down to the promised land and then over to Egypt and then back to the promised land. Then there's the division between him and Lot, and Abram is settled in Hebron, and that's where we leave him tonight. All right, let's talk about the trials of Abraham. Some of the trials that Abraham faced. What do you see in these chapters? Interesting, very good. God didn't ask him, hey, Abraham, would you be interested in traveling a little bit? And are you kind of tired of this? And if you are, then I've got a place for you. If you're not, then I've got something else. I've got somebody else that can go. You go. Didn't ask him if he wanted to. Just go. And he did. So he had to leave a home to go to an unknown place. I don't know about you, but when I'm familiar with home, I'm not so sure about that unknown place. It may be better, but it may be worse. Abraham didn't know. God just said, go. Secondly, he had to occupy an occupied land. That's a trial. And as soon as he gets there, there's a famine. How would you like for somebody to say, I'm going to give you a place to live, and as soon as you get there, you can't stay because you got a problem, got to go somewhere else for a while. And then he had the Egyptians wanting his wife, and then there was strife when he got back to the land. Finally gets out of Egypt where they're trying to get his wife, and he gets there, and then there's friction going on in the family. Abraham had trials, and as if that's not enough, it ain't over. Because God's going to ask him to believe he's going to have a son in his old age. And then God's going to say, now that you've got this son, I want you to kill him. It ain't over. Questions, comments? Good point. Good point. That's not home. That's not the place that God had promised him. Good point. Well, that's true. That's true. Let's go to question number 8. What choice did Lot make that, and how did it affect him? We talked about that in part. I'm interested in what you put on that question. Question number 8. What choice did Lot make and how did it affect him? Got too close to Sodom. Got too close to a corrupt city. What else? Good point.
I thought maybe he thought that his family was stronger than the people of Sodom were acting, but they still
didn't. Good point. We probably won't deal with the details of this till we get to chapter 19. By the way, you might make a marginal note at chapter 13 about verse 10, 11, 12, somewhere right in there. If this were our cursory reading of this and we didn't know much more about Lot, we might think, well, Lot, he was just a really a wicked guy himself is why he's interested in that. No. 2 Peter, make a note, 2 Peter chapter 2, 7 and 8, Lot was a righteous man. See, I'm learning a lot about dangers. If Abraham could have a lapse of faith for a moment, I could too. If a righteous man, and it's God calling him a righteous man, so I know he was a righteous man, Lot being a righteous man could make a poor decision. I might make some poor decisions. That kind of scares you, doesn't it? But here's the thing I wanted you to see here, and we'll come to this more in chapter 19. The consequences. He was oppressed and he was tormented. His own faith was weakened and he sunk to a low. His remaining daughters were morally ruined. He lost everything that meant anything to him, et cetera, et cetera. There was great consequences to that decision. That was a quick decision. I believe I'll go this direction. This is a better land. I'm going to go towards Sodom. And that proved to be very, very disastrous. Very disastrous. Make sense? All right, let's go to question number 10. I think we've got time to do this one. And let's talk about some practical things. Chapters 12 and 13. It's historical, but it's not just historical. By that I simply mean it's not just, okay, Abraham went from here to here to here, and that's the story. There's some very practical things. What did you learn from 12 and 13 you take home with you? Good point. Good point. He was willing to take the lesser, at least in Lot's mind, if this solves the issue, the friction. Good point. Yes, ma'am. Very good point. When we get to choosing of the apostles, which we get to soon in Matthew, those are not the guys. If God had left it to me, I would have chosen. I mean, this looks like a disaster. And Abraham wouldn't have been the man I would have chosen to be. Come out of idolatry? Are you kidding me? And yet God saw something there that we wouldn't see. Good point. Good point. Practical things you take home with you, 12 and 13. Say again.
Human knowledge will never trump God's wisdom and promise.
Absolutely. 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 I learned from this that half-truths can be deceptive. What I told was true. But if it was with the intent to mislead, it is deceptive. And that's what, and we'll see that later in chapter 20, clearer than we do here. So just hold off on any judgment on that, except tie that to chapter 20. And bad decision. What else? Time's about gone. Good point. Shannon?
Oftentimes following God is not the easy thing or the easy way. That's one practical lesson. Another one is that even a man of older age can have a lot to be promised still and a lot to do still in the kingdom.
Yeah, sometimes we think our usefulness is over, and there was a lot. He's just getting started. He's 75. Larry?
Just because we do our own separate ways doesn't make work not right with God. There's times where we have to go our separation of peace and harmony, so we go to our own works. So,
yeah, Acts 15 would be a case in point. Good point, good point.
Go ahead,
JP? Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's get one more.
As we bring to it, thinking about God punished Pharaoh. That coincidence, but he didn't. We don't read about him punishing Abraham. So, Abraham did wrong, but he put the punishment on Pharaoh.
Yeah. Good point. We're going to stop right there. Chapters 14 and 15 next time.